If you're innovating, creating, or making a difference, this show is for you.
Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
Me, the other comic, and the monkey were all performing against each other on America's Funniest People. And daggone it, if that monkey didn't win $10,000. And the other human, the other guy, and myself, we're looking at each other like, is this really happening?
Comedian Jill Sharga is officially one of the funniest people in America. She's also one of the most thought-provoking, as she proves in her recent TED Talk entitled The Awe of Awesome, which is now highlighted in TED's 8-minute clip of 2014's greatest hits. In addition to her comedy skills, Jill is a professional graphic designer and the founder of the all-female comedy show An Evening of Estrogen, which she created in 1996. Jill, what do you remember best about your growing up years in Orlando, Florida?
Well, it was a wonderful town to grow up in. Of course, this is before Disney, before Universal, before SeaWorld. And we were the tiny little town on the way down to Miami. Everybody would stop by and pick up oranges on their way south. So it was a very sleepy little town. My family is a terrific family. Thank God everybody is still alive, you know. Very, very funny family. I have a sister and my mom and dad.
That is so neat. What happened first for you? Did you really love graphics and art first, or comedy and performing?
Oh, I would think maybe comedy. I think it was sort of all happened at the same time. I was making money a couple of years earlier than my comedy career. I just enjoyed comedy from the very, very, very beginning, when I was a really shy kid when I was growing up.
How'd you go from being a really shy kid to loving to perform?
Well, I was funny when it was time for recess. I would tell jokes. We would write little plays and things like that. And I knew there was a time and a place for everything. And then as I was getting older, I was enjoying the real laughter feedback, that instant feedback that you get when you tell jokes or make strangers laugh. Boy, that is a high like you wouldn't believe.
What was it like for you when you started your comedy career? How'd that happen?
Well, there was a few steps, and this is going back to the 1960s, 70s, 80s, 90s. When I was a young kid, I was always watching Merv Griffin, you know, Ed Sullivan, Johnny Carson, Mike Douglas. Those shows always had the stand-up comic, and I could not get enough of this. I would run home from school. I would stay up late. I would do anything I could to watch the stand-up comic who would come on any one of those shows. And I thought, you know, I bet you I could do that, but how am I going to do that? I'm only 7 years old. How am I going to do that? So I thought, well, I'll just keep at it. And a few years went by, and I wrote a fan letter to Joan Rivers, who was performing at the Sahara Hotel in Las Vegas. And since then, of course, it's been torn down. But I thought, you know, I'm just going to write her a letter and see what happens. I wrote a very funny letter. In a couple of weeks, she wrote back with a contract inside. And that just blew my mind, Dot. I mean, here I am, I'm about 23 years old, and I've just made contact, you know, with my idol. Are you kidding me? I mean, game over. I'm done. I was so, so surprised by that. So inside this letter from her on her personal stationery is a contract, which essentially was, whatever I buy from you, I get to own it forever and ever. You can't resell this one-liner. And I thought, okay. And I gave myself a deadline of about a month or so. I wrote 19 one-liners, typed them up, sent them back to her, and she bought one or two of them for $9 a piece.
Wow.
That was some pretty heady times right there. So now what do I do? Well, I met through a mutual friend a guy who was doing stand-up, and he wanted a comedy writing partner, and I said, yeah, okay. So we started writing sketches, and then we would just go around Orlando anywhere where we could get some stage time. We would do open mics. We would do in bars. We would play for pitchers of beer. We weren't making any money, but we were getting stage time and writing and performing. So we answered an audition, a notice on the paper, and I believe it was on the radio. So we went down there, and they hired us. They liked us, and this group was called the Funny Farm. And we did sketch comedy, improv, we did song parodies, we were writing all kinds of original stuff. It was so fun. I was the only girl in the group. And we would do two shows Friday and two shows Saturday, and then we would do two shows on a Wednesday down in Tampa, about an hour and a half away. So I lived, eat, and breathed comedy for about 4 or 5 years like this. And then my writing partner wanted to leave and go out on the road, and I thought, well, I can't do that. I don't want to do that. So I stayed here, and I just developed my own act, which was writing and singing song parodies. I've always loved to play guitar, and I was okay at it, but I needed to do something by myself as a solo act. So I did that for a few years, and then one day I got a call from a friend who said, that show, America's Funniest People, is coming to town. Back up. I got to insert something. After I made my own act as song parodies, I performed at a club with another stand-up comic, and she had done voiceover work for American Comedy Network. And she said, wow, your songs are really good. I'm wondering if the folks at American Comedy Network would like to buy some. And I thought, yeah, okay, that sounds good. And sure enough, they did. She had a connection there, and she sent one of my tapes to them. And American Comedy Network, you being in radio, you may know this, it's a syndicate service for radio stations. It was about 180 radio stations back then. This is probably the mid-1980s. And radio stations would drop in these comedy bits to fill up time. And so a couple of those would be my songs that they would re-record, but I would get a couple of dollars. Not a lot, but if it was $50, that was a big deal. So that was just working with another comic, now got me onto national radio. And then a few years went by, and a friend of mine said, the show America's Funniest People is coming to Orlando. Why don't you come with me, and we'll see what we can do. And he had his own stand-up act, and I said, okay, fine. He says, bring your guitar. I said, okay, fine. Well, I get down there, and sure enough, the producer picks me. He says, okay, do your songs. I did my song. He says, do you have more? I said, sure. I played another song. He says, do you have another one? I said, okay. And I played three songs, and I knew something was going on because I seemed to have been getting a lot of attention. And then I went to work that night, which I happened to have worked at the Orlando Sentinel that night, in the art department. And he calls and he says, could we come up tonight and videotape you while you're on the job? And I thought, well, okay, sure. And they came up with a film crew and taped a few minutes of me working. And he said, okay, it's been nice, and you might hear from us very soon. And I thought, okay, that sounds great. The next day was a Monday, and I got a phone call from America's Funniest People, and they said, we'd like to fly you out here to L.A. to record the show, to be on the show. I said, wow, that's fantastic. And he said, in a couple of days, you're going to get a ticket FedEx to you, and we'll see you in about 5 days. And I thought, okay. So the ticket came, and I flew out to L.A. on a Friday night. And to make a longer story even longer, there was another comic in the van. When they picked us up, they put us in a van, myself, and then a guy, and way in the back of this van is like a cage. And I thought, oh, maybe there's a dog act or something. Well, there's a monkey inside the cage. There is a full-grown chimpanzee in the cage with his handler in the very back of this van. And we're leaving LAX, going to the Sheraton Hotel there at Universal, I think it was. And we check in, and everyone has their own room. And the next day, they pick us up, and it was me, the other comic, and the monkey were all performing against each other on America's Funniest People. Operative word people, not America's Funniest Things That Walk Upright. That's not what the show was, Dot. It was America's Funniest People, and daggone it if that monkey didn't win $10,000.
What is a monkey going to do with $10,000?
Well, you tell me. I don't know. But that monkey won 10 grand, and that monkey had an agent. That monkey had already done some films, Every Which Way But Loose, with Clint Eastwood. You know, and the other human, the other guy and myself, we're looking at each other like, is this really happening? But still, that got me on national TV. And then that sort of elevated my comedy career quite a bit, because now I had a national television credit to my name. And then I came home a few years later. I was performing at a club, and a guy in the audience came up to me after the show, and he was a producer for a huge AIDS benefit here in Orlando, and would I like to be in that show? And I said, sure. So that was three of those. We did one a year. The first one, Lily Tomlin was the headliner. The next year, Paula Poundstone was the headliner. And the last one was Louis Anderson. So that was a lot of fun, very successful. And then after that, I had left the Sentinel, and I wrote an essay, a comedy essay, about the overuse of the word awesome, how I just couldn't take it anymore, and how everybody was using the word awesome to describe the most mundane of things. And that got published in the paper, and that served as the outline for the next thing I did, which was Pachakasha. Pachakasha is Japanese for chit-chat, and it's a PowerPoint event that started in Japan by two American architects, and they limit you to 20 slides, and each slide is projected on the wall for only 20 seconds at a time. So the whole thing is 6 minutes and 40 seconds. Now, here's the kicker, is that each slide, it changes automatically. You cannot control the speed of the slides. So your narration has to kind of fit what it is that you're talking about. And it can be on anything. But it's quite a challenge to do. You think it sounds easy, it is not. So there are 700 of these Pachakasha cities. There are 700 cities in the world that put on these Pachakasha events. And they are really interesting. They're very fast, and they're on all kinds of subjects. The one here in Orlando, I went with a friend. We said, this is new to town. Let's go check this out. We went, and at the end of the first Pachakasha, I thought, how can I get to do this? What can I do to get in here and make one of these PowerPoints? And so I thought, well, I think that awesome essay that I wrote would make for a great visual. And I sent that to him, and he said, yeah, okay. So a couple of months went by, and I did the next Pachakasha. That got a huge response. And they videotaped it, and so I had that link on the video. I sent that link to TED. So after the Pachakasha, I thought, well, what can I do with this now? I can only do this one time. What else am I going to do with this? So I went to the TED site, and there was an open call for their TED at New York City talent search, and to send them a link or a videotape of some kind. And I thought, sure, I've got nothing to lose. So I sent that to them, forgot about it. A couple of months went by. This was probably in February, March, April, May, June 6, 2014. I get an email saying that I was accepted to do a TED Talk.
Wow.
And that's how I got there.
What goes through your head when you're standing up there on that stage starting your TED Talk? What do you think?
Well, it was very exciting. Everyone in the room was familiar with each other. It was made up of TED staffers and previous TED speakers, previous TED attendees. So these people they can't wait to hear what you have to say. So I thought, wow, this is great. I was just so excited to be performing in New York. I had always wanted to perform in New York, but never had the chance. And there's the big red TED logo right there on stage. And there were 5 video cameras in the room. And we had a brief rehearsal the day before at the TED headquarters. And they were so easygoing and so fun, so supportive. Everyone kicked off their shoes and were sitting around on throw pillows. And the man that sort of owns TED, the curator, Chris Anderson, was there. He's giving notes to those that he thought might have needed a couple of tweaks on their TED Talks. It was just incredible. Really, really fun.
That's an amazing TED Talk. I would recommend that anybody check it out on YouTube that gets a chance to. I would also love to hear a little bit about your comedy show, An Evening of Estrogen. How'd you come to create that one?
Well, that is through the years of performing at comedy clubs all over Florida and the South. Anywhere I went, it was always a male headliner. Typically, it's a male headliner, another male feature act, and a male MC opening act. Every once in a while, there might be a female headliner or another female MC. And boy, when you get a couple of women together, you're going to have a rockin' good show. So I thought, you know, I've done all these clubs. I don't want to do this anymore. I want to have a little bit more control over the show. So I started and made up An Evening of Estrogen. So I use female performers and comics, and we sell out anywhere we go because it's like a freak show. This is so unheard of. It's unusual, and we all cover various different subjects. We all look different. We all sound different, and we get a really good response.
And you make it look very easy, but what kind of work is involved when you start from scratch, create your own show, get performers, and now you have to rehearse and get material, etc.?
Well, it would be, you surround yourself with really great people, they make you look good. That is true for no matter what it is you do, don't you think? I mean, that's everything.
You know, I absolutely agree.
They elevate your game, and if they want to try something, then we'll try something. You know, I'm not the queen of the show, but I do listen to what they have to say. But I'm also the producer, and so it's either how we look or the money or who's going to make the posters. Well, because I'm also a graphic designer, I take care of that stuff too. But I'm always looking for strong female performers, always.
What if somebody hears this right now and says, well, I'm a comedian. How do I get a hold of her? What are you looking for?
Well, someone who has a few years under their belt, who's very, very secure, very strong on stage, very confident. Not an open micer, I'm sorry, but someone who can do probably anywhere between 10 minutes to 30 minutes. You know, sometimes things change. Suddenly you have to do less time, you have to do more time, but typically that's what happens. I've done shows where the producer would come up to me and say, you know, I told you to do 15 minutes, now we're going to do 8 minutes. You have to be able to suddenly turn on a dime and be able to perform like that, which is kind of tough. But if you have a video or something, send me a link. It helps if you live here in Orlando, but I understand.
And send it to you through your website, sharga.com?
You could probably find me there, or eveningofestrogen.com.
Eveningofestrogen.com. With your show, Evening of Estrogen, what would you consider one of your absolute best experiences, and what's been one of the biggest challenges?
We have done fundraisers where they have come back and said, we had a terrific time. This was more than what we expected. When you get great feedback the next day, that's everything. Because we've all done things where you just hope, well, they're laughing at the right parts. But something about a real good letter or an email, wow, this was more than what we wanted. That's always nice. And your other question, what was the challenge?
One of the biggest challenges you've had with An Evening of Estrogen?
Well, getting a lot of the male comedy bookers and agents to believe in the fact that an all-female comedy show is very funny, and you could make this into a huge thing. And a lot of them just still don't want to believe that. And it's kind of sad, but that's what's happening still today.
That's astonishing, because I have here that you created the show in 1996, 18 years of making people laugh hysterically, and they're still like, no, babe, I don't think so, or whatever they say. Boo, hiss.
Yes. Well, it's, you know, I think sometimes there's that, you know, old boy type of a network that still goes on. There's not like a 22-year-old boy out there who's booking shows, not for probably the demographic that we want. We like the baby boomers, and, well, we would definitely probably have a better response if it was a baby boomer type of an audience.
Our listeners are going to want to know where they can hear you perform.
Well, that's the thing, is that we're always interested. We will entertain any idea. I don't have a booking right now on the calendar, but if you're interested, please let me know.
Sharga.com or eveningofestrogen.com.
Exactly. Either one will work.
As we conclude here, Jill, what would you most like people to take away from your experience as an artist and as a comedian about creativity, innovation, and making a difference?
I would say to anyone, no matter what you do, you have nothing to lose and everything to gain. No matter what it is you're doing, you have nothing to lose. I sent a fan letter. You know, I showed up because somebody said, you know, let's try this. A mutual friend said, I know somebody who can do this. You know, and I just said, sure, you have nothing to lose. And I would say, if you treat yourself like that through the rest of your life, I think you'll be okay.
Jill, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Dot. This was a lot of fun. I can't wait to hear it.
You and I have been listening to comedian and graphic artist Jill Sharga. You can find out more about Jill's all-female comedy show, An Evening of Estrogen, on her website, eveningofestrogen.com. And as she mentioned, she's always looking for strong female comedians. If you're a seasoned female performer, you're invited to send her a link. That's eveningofestrogen.com. And you'll also find her graphic design work on her website, sharga.com. That's spelled S like Sam, H-A-R-G-A-A, sharga.com. And congratulations to Jill on having her TED Talk, The Awe of Awesome, included in TED's 8-minute Best of Reel for 2014. That is exciting. You can check that out at yearinideas.ted.com or go to TED.com and search for Jill Sharga. Her talk on The Awe of Awesome should come right up. And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more Over Coffee podcasts, our link is twomavericks.com. That's twomaverix.com. And you can contact us at twomavericks@gmail.com. The music you're hearing is royalty-free production music provided by Pond5 at pond5.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.